Don't spend another winter with your home colder than it should be. Hi, I'm Roy Spencer with PermaSeal. We measure the amount of heat loss and recommend solutions to keep it comfortable. Call PermaSeal for your free estimate, 800-421-SEAL, or visit permaseal.net.
All right, thank you, Kim. Steve Bertrand here, and welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch on this Tuesday afternoon. If it's Tuesday, that means John Najarian is on a phone line. Coming up a little bit later, Louis Lazar, who writes for the Chicago Business Journal, will be here. We'll go over some convention numbers with him. And as I said earlier, Andrew Herman as well from DNA Info. All of that and more. But we always start with John Najarian, who has been holding forever. John, welcome back to the program.
No, delighted. I get to listen to you and Orion and all the updates at the top of the hour.
Well, let's start about that. You know, Orion talked about the Saudi oil minister, Naimi, saying that they will meet next month and talk about a production freeze, but that there won't be any cuts. And it seems to me that if these oil-producing nations want to pump up the price of their product, they probably are going to need to cut things. So what do you see there?
Well, what you and Orion described is exactly why the market, crude oil market, that is down a little over 5% to $31.77. Disagreements between or by various parties within OPEC, there are some parties about to be in that distribution, that is, not OPEC itself, but, for instance, Iran, that are going to be the wild cards as far as what goes on going forward, not only Russia but Iran. And so the fact that they have not agreed to production cuts, a freeze that was agreed to by four of the nations within OPEC, isn't really going to do much as far as cutting back on supply, because a freeze in production near record levels at almost every locale that pumps crude oil outside of the Bakken and the Marcellus, of course, here domestically, those freezes aren't going to have the desired effect ultimately.
So
you need a production cut, and it doesn't seem like it's in the cards just yet.
I was going to say, it sounds like you're saying they've got the spigot wide open and they've agreed not to open it anymore.
Exactly. That is exactly what it is, and they're not even sure how big the spigot is in Iran when they start putting onto the global market as well.
I want to ask you about what's going on in England. You know, David Cameron was before Parliament earlier this week. A couple hundred business leaders came out today to promote the plan for England to stay in the EU. They're facing a vote on that. I think it's coming up in June. And I just wonder if that's the sort of thing that's on your radar now.
It is, but again, it's, in my mind anyway, Stephen, not really something that's going to be as impactful as if the European Union itself were to break up. Although this is certainly a very big kink in the armor of the EU. They've never been part of the common currency, but there are a number of people within the EU that are not part of the common currency, but Britain is by far the largest. And now they're saying that they don't really like, if you've heard Boris Johnson perhaps say this, that he supports the Brexit, as they're calling it, the British exit from the EU.
Boris is trouble.
And he does not like, nor do an awful lot of Britons or people that live in the UK, they don't like the idea that they don't have a say in things like immigration. Because if you're part of the EU, then that, whatever it is, 17-nation consortium basically dictates to everybody what the immigration status would be. And it's not going to be a democracy. It's going to be basically that the British people have one of those many votes, but it's not enough for them to say, hey, look, this isn't working for us. We want to stop this. And right now they are one of the people that's standing up loud and clear saying, no more, no mas. We can't take it anymore. It's going to hurt our jobs. It's going to hurt exports even from this country. So we'd like to get out of this. And I think that'll be a rallying cry for Boris and the other people that support a Brexit.
I'm sure we'll talk about this more before the vote in June. And I want you to practice saying no mas with a British accent.
That's right.
We can do that a little bit later.
I'll have to work on it.
Home Depot did well in their reporting today. Macy's, they said, lost quite a bit, down 31% in fourth quarter profits, but still beat expectations.
Yeah, and Macy's was just as strong as Home Depot in terms of beating on all of the metrics and guiding higher for the year. So the stock's just a little bit off of its recent high. It's still up almost 5% on the day. Home Depot, as you say, a lot of us chose to do a lot of home fixing up apparently in the fourth quarter, and that was great for them. They're up 2%. But as you said, I think the move out of Macy's much stronger and much better even than the Home Depot, which was a really strong number. And perhaps that was partially because Terry Lundgren, the chairman over there, had talked about how bad things could be just weeks ago. And it turned out to be that maybe he was, just trying to soften up the outlook so that they could indeed beat on the guidance, since so many firms lowered their estimates going forward.
We're talking to John Najeri. And John, do you have a stock tip for us this week?
Yes, sir. Today I bought Red Hat. It's a maker of Linux software. So in other words, open source, rather than going with Microsoft or even an Apple operating system, the iOS or whatever. Red Hat helps people that are in that open source space. And the stock had come down pretty nicely over the last several months. And down here at around 65, we were an aggressive buyer along with a lot of institutional clients. So we're hoping that that stock pushes from 65 to 70 in the basically the next 2 months, because they were buying April 70 calls.
John Najeri, look, I appreciate your insights. It's always great to talk to you, and I thank you for joining us again this week.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Stephen.
You bet. You can follow John on Twitter at Option Monster. Of course, watch him on CNBC as well. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Andrew Herman is here from DNA Info Chicago. Andrew, welcome to the program.
Hey, Steve.
All right, so we've been having fun off the air talking about this HBO series Vinyl.
Yeah.
Which you're into.
Yeah, yeah. The record business in the 70s.
1970, set in 73, I think it starts. So
yeah.
There are a couple episodes, if you call them that, out.
Yeah.
And I watched the first one last night, two hours.
You know, sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
God,
HBO special.
It's just what HBO is. And it's Martin Scorsese and Mick Jagger collaborating on it.
Throw in a good amount of violence.
Yeah.
It's all the whole package.
There. And so we can relive that, apparently, in Wicker Park these days. Now, we talked a week or two ago about the Jazz Record Mart closing downtown Chicago or just north of the Loop. But DNA also writes about the fact that there's almost become an incubator area for vinyl shops in Wicker Park.
Right, kind of a vinyl district. There's five stores there, and one of them, Suga, 1272 North Milwaukee, it's a year old and it's already doubled in size.
Wow.
So you have all these shops, and it's become a destination for record buyers. And we've talked a little bit about this in the past. Certain businesses, if you get a business that's similar to your own that moves in the neighborhood, it's not necessarily competition, but can sort of help you become a destination point and increase sales.
That's what I like about this story, right? So you might think, I want to be a record store in an island or on an island where there are no others. That's certainly not the case here. And they talk about how, yeah, we recommend each other. We sort of live off of each other.
Yeah, I mean, if you go into one record store and they ask you, what are you looking for, and you don't have it, and you say, well, but the guy down the street might have it pretty soon. You know, you're sort of building good feelings among customers. The customers like to come back, and you're all better in the end. But
go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the Suga place at 1272 North Milwaukee, they are growing in size, and they're adding cassettes.
That's what I was going to say. So my daughter is a sophomore in college, and she's totally into cassettes right now.
Is that right?
Yeah, and because we go to Half Price Books, and you can buy them for, I think it's a dime or a quarter.
I mean, it's like the worst platform
it's
for music ever, right?
It's not 8-track. 8-track's worse.
I mean, they stretch out, they break, they eat up your player.
It's just
terrible, but they're still a pretty small percentage.
And so
of
these stores then, are they sort of collector albums, or are they, you know, you're going to buy the Cars Candio there?
Well, I mean, you can, I think it's a combination of both. The record industry has seen that there's a niche market for vinyl, though it's still pretty small. Only 12 million sold in 2014, which seems like a lot, but when you look at the number of CDs sold or online streaming, those are both over $100 million, or over $100 million.
Right.
So cassettes and vinyl, still pretty small. Cassettes even smaller, like in the thousands.
You can read a lot more about that at dnainfo.com. Also, though, I want to go to East Pilsen. And I love the story, the Schoenhofen Brewery. How did it do with that?
Mm-hmm, good.
It was a brewery before Prohibition. They started making Green River during Prohibition to stay open.
Right.
The building, the facade, was used in the Blues Brothers movie as the orphanage. And now it's getting new life as a distillery.
St. Helena of the Blessed Shroud.
That
was the orphanage.
That's right, exactly.
You know, run by, I don't know what her name was, but Sister Mary Stigmata, I believe.
Right, you're pulling it up there. Yeah.
CH Distillery, they're opening this new plant. It's at 1611 South Clinton. It's a vacant lot now, but they are going to build a 20,000 square foot plant to make this craft vodka. And
so that's right, craft beer we've talked about, but craft spirits are big too.
Yeah.
The thing that struck me in this article was that they said that people want to, they want to know where the stuff they're drinking is coming from. I don't know if I buy that. I think there's a little sort of snobbishness to this,
well,
and that's the draw.
Yeah. I mean, their selling point is that their vodka is made with Illinois grain.
Yeah.
And so, evidently, this is an appeal for some people.
I don't know. I mean, when I say snobbish, I don't mean it that way, but it's a craft beer. You want a craft liquor.
Well, what if someone were to offer you wine and they said, yeah, and this is made from grapes Illinois,
yeah.
Or you can have the stuff with the grapes from California, you're more likely to say, oh, California.
I think I would go with California. So this is the CH Distillery. Do they have a shop?
They do. At their current location on Randolph, 564 West Randolph, is where they have a distillery now. And they're going to continue to operate the tasting facility there. And they might open one up in East Pilsen, but they need to get that plant up. And they think that they can get it up and running before the end of the year.
All right, so here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to East Pilsen. We're going to buy a bottle of craft vodka.
Uh-huh.
Then we're going to go up to Wicker Park and buy some old Led Zeppelin discs. And then we're going to go home and watch HBO.
I think that's the right order.
We've done like the 30s, the 70s, and 2010 all in one.
All right.
Andrew Herman from DNA Info. Good to see you again.
Okay.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Kim. It is 12:37 in Chicago. You're listening to The Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Another big announcement when it comes to Chicago media today, and Louis Lazar writes about media and all of that for the Chicago Business Journal. He joins us on a phone line now. Louis, welcome back to the program.
Hello. It's been a big day. You're right about that.
How about that? So Michael Farrow is this guy who was named he's the chairman, I guess, the biggest shareholder in Tribune Publishing. That's the company that's not Tribune Media, which now owns WGN Radio. It's Tribune Publishing, which is the newspapers. And today the announcement that the CEO, Jack Griffin, was apparently shown the door.
Quite abruptly and quite quickly, the way Farrow operates. He became non-executive chairman of the Tribune Publishing Board of Directors in early February, and really a little more than 2 weeks later, Griffin is gone. You know.
Yeah, he's gone. There's a change, a new editor at the paper as well. I don't know how related that is, but Bruce Dold, who is a wonderful man, is now the editor of the paper. But clearly, it's a very changing industry. The people who work for the Tribune have gone through whiplash a few times over the past 10 years, and I'm just wondering if they're going to feel that again.
Well, I think everything is up for grabs now. But the one thing that came out of this morning's developments very clearly is that Farrow and his new second-in-command, Mr. Dearborn, are very much interested in the technology of whatever there is at Tribune Publishing rather than the newspapers in and of themselves. And I think that's what's going to be the focus in going forward if they don't decide to sell the whole company lock, stock, and barrel. There was a rumor about that, you know, in late last year, and that hasn't been entirely put to rest either.
Tell me about this idea of focusing on the technology rather than the paper. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think, you know, using all of these different consumer touch points that these newspapers have to generate more ways to get advertising and all of these things that I don't profess to be an expert on the technology end of it, but this is the way that Google and a lot of these other online organizations that are data-oriented operate.
Justin Dearborn was the CEO of Merge, which we've talked about Merge on this program quite a bit. It's a medical healthcare sort of digital operation.
Imaging.
So right, so he's got great great experience when it comes to that. So what do you see for the future of this paper?
Well, as I said, I think it's to be determined. I haven't ruled out the possibility that Faro may be looking to optimize his investment and possibly sell. I mean, there is a rumor that a venture capital firm in New York was interested several months ago in buying all of the newspapers, lock, stock, and barrel. And if they don't sell them all together, there is this outstanding issue relative to the Los Angeles Times, which was a huge sticking point for Griffin before he left, because they wanted to return that to local ownership. Now, whether that will happen as part of Faro's new game plan, we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, that LA Times acquisition has been a thorn in the side of the company since the morning it happened.
Totally. But it really got worse last summer when Griffin fired Austin Buettner, the publisher, who had been many in the local community there had been a huge fan of, and nobody liked that move, and that really re-upped the demand to sell the paper to local ownership.
You know, it's almost, Lewis, it's almost a study in colonialism, where you've got the conquering country sitting in Chicago moving in and taking over part of L.A., and the natives in L.A. never accepted the new government.
Never. I mean, there was never any chemistry between Tribune and the L.A. community. So I think we will see what will happen in regards to that happen very quickly now that all this has happened today.
So let's talk about conventions. You write about the convention business a lot in Chicago. Let's go back just for a point of reference to 2004. I think the revenue for the McPeer Authority 2004 was $167.4 million. Okay, that's a pretty good number. Here we are 11 years later. I can only imagine how big the number must be this year.
Well, not bigger at all. It's actually shrunk by $400,000.
How can it be?
But who's counting? And, you know, in Rahm Emanuel's administration, little points like this are completely glossed over because everything is on the up and up as far as he's concerned. But anyway, that's Rahm Emanuel's modus operandi.
How can it be that 11 years later we're bringing in less money than we did then?
Well, because the convention business is changing, and one of the things that's changing about it is Chicago is not the epicenter the way it used to be 10 or 20 years ago. I mean, all of these emerging markets like Orlando, Las Vegas, San Diego, and even Nashville, Tennessee, which is really coming on strong, are becoming majorly attractive locations for conventions, and it's hurting Chicago.
You write, and people can read more of what you're writing at bizjournals.com, the Chicago Business Journal, Lewis Lazar here, but you write about the fact that Chicago is sort of reconfiguring to go after medium and even smaller size shows because there are more of those to choose from.
Right, and if they do the stuff correctly, they can make a fair amount of money off of those. But that's still very much a tangent that they're just really beginning to explore in great depth. But I think they're going to have to speed up those efforts as these bigger conventions go to other markets in years to come.
Late last year, I think it was late last year, maybe earlier this year, Don Welsh, the boss at Choose Chicago, left his post, and so I would imagine they're working on finding a replacement, but I'm a little surprised they don't have one yet.
Well, I think, you know, I mean, Emanuel's got a lot of, unfortunately or fortunately as the case may be, a lot of other issues on his plate now, so this has to take a bit of a back seat while he's resolving all of his other issues about how he's going to govern this city. And, you know, Desiree Rogers, who's the head of the board for the Choose Chicago, which sort of oversees the convention industry in the city, she seems to be under fire suddenly also, as if people are pointing the finger at her for letting this Don Welsh get away. But I'm not entirely sure that she's the one to blame here.
Yeah, I mean, there's just been trouble at Choose Chicago for a while, right? You wrote that famously, how they stripped money from their budget. They had great expectations and then said do it without any cash.
It's been, you know, jigging and jagging one way and another. I mean, there hasn't been a clear way forward for this organization for the past two or three years as various factors have borne down on it.
You had a nice piece yesterday, something sort of, I don't know, a little attitude to it about the Spike Lee appearance. He's coming.
Did we know, Mr. Manager of the media,
right.
Spike Lee.
He's coming to Northwestern, and he's going to speak, and the media is invited as long as they wear gags and don't bring any of their equipment inside, apparently.
It's his rules of the highway. It sounds a little bit like Rahm Emanuel, but yeah, they made it very clear in their press statements yesterday that you either follow these rules or you're cordially not invited.
And what's he going to Northwestern for? Is he talking about Chirac, or what is he talking about just in general?
Well, they're going to have a screening of the movie. It's an evening affair. They screen the movie, and then he appears. It was unclear whether they're going to be people with him or he's just going to appear by himself to discuss the movie. And it's just students that are invited, students and faculty. The public is not invited to this at all, so that was made clear as well. But it's apparently to discuss the movie and issues related to it after they screen the movie.
So will you go to this great event and not take notes?
Well,
I suppose you could take notes.
It's really just got on my radar screen yesterday. Now, with all these parameters that have been put in place, I may be too curious not to go.
The school announced this morning that Seth Meyer will deliver the commencement address, and I think they probably will welcome coverage there. Louis Lazar, right? I think so.
I have no doubt.
Thank you very much for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Thanks again.
Louis Lazar, you bet. You can read a lot more from Louis at the Chicago Business Journal. It's 12:45. We'll take a break, come back, and talk about your home mortgage. Is it time to refinance? Good idea, bad idea? We'll kick that around after this on 720 WGN. Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Tuesday afternoon. What's your mortgage look like? Barry Sterner is the CEO of Townstone Financial. He joins us now on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Barry, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Did I say that right? Townstone Financial?
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Because, you know, we hear it for years and years, and all of a sudden when I said it out loud, I got a little worried. I got it wrong.
One of our clients, as you are. Come on.
I am one of your clients.
You got to know Townstone Financial.
It's absolutely true. I'm a client. And so, and we were talking about this off the air. Well, let me ask first, the Fed increased interest rates. Everyone said, what's that going to do to the housing market? What has that done to the mortgage rates? Has there been a big impact or no?
The initial increase in December, rates went up a little bit. There's no doubt about that. But the thing that's really happened, and, you can listen to anybody who comes on here and talks about the Fed right now, the Fed thinks that the U.S. economy is going along pretty well. I mean, we all do. Job growth, creation, everything's been doing pretty well. However, we live in the world that when the Chinese sneeze or something happens in Europe these days or in Asia, anywhere else, I said China and Asia, it affects...
Yeah.
The United States. And the truth of the matter is that when people are selling stocks, and we all know the stock market has gone down whatever percentage, 10-15%, they are taking what's left, let's not call it profits, losses, whatever you want to say, and they want to put it somewhere safe. And when they go and look for somewhere safe, where they're going? They're going to the United States. They're buying a 10-year note. They're buying a 10-year bond, a 30-year bond, whatever it happens to be, a U.S. Treasury denominated asset. And when they're buying those assets, the interest rates start to go down. Mm-hmm. No matter what the Federal Reserve does, unless they're in there every day, which we know they're not, they're meeting quarterly. So that's really what's happened here, is that people have taken their money, bought something safe, and interest rates have gone down. We're actually right near where we were in 2012.
No kidding.
Yes.
All right, so here's my thing. And I refinanced last year with your company, and it was very nice. But I've resisted in the past because, I've been in my house for 20 years. I don't see myself moving, anytime soon until I have to start building the ramps to get in and out.
Absolutely. Get the wheelchair going.
Yeah, but I've resisted sometimes because I tell my wife, I want to pay the house off eventually. I don't want to keep extending another 30 years or keep pushing that date out. And you were saying there's more flexibility with that now.
Absolutely. It used to take me hours to describe that if you kept paying the same mortgage amount, if I reduced your rate from 4.5% to 4%, you still paid the same amount and you had 26 years left, you would definitely pay it off before 26 years. But here's to everybody listening today. The lenders and everybody have finally figured out that to make that explanation takes too long. So we can customize your mortgage. I will say it again. We can customize your mortgage. If we're going to go off a 30-year fixed rate or a 15-year fix or even a 20 or 25, and you say to me, I only have for a 30-year fix, I only have 20 years left, or let's do a 30. I only have 26 years left. We can make the amortization 26 years, so you're not going backwards.
I like that. Okay, so how is business? I mean, I hear about this post-Super Bowl house buying season. I mean, do you see seasons like that, or how are things going?
I mean, right now, the purchase market is still very, very vibrant. And I was telling you earlier, between October, November, and December, we probably had the greatest amount of purchases that we've had since 2008, 2009, since, you know, really the end of the debacle there. And right now, this morning, I probably had four or five phone calls of people trying to get pre-qualified right now and looking for houses. The real interesting thing that's going on today is there's a lack of supply. People, you know, if you drive around neighborhoods, I live in the South Loop here, there was nothing for sale this past weekend.
Why do you think that is?
It's a very interesting dynamic. The only thing that I can possibly think of is many, many people are sitting in their house with low interest rates. They're looking around and saying, I don't really want to move low interest rate wise. I have this low payment. But it's the other kind of odd dynamic also of the millennial and the person in that first time home buying house. We've had a very, very tiered marketplace here where the bottom of the market really hasn't been moving. The first time home buyer, the millennial, has been renting.
That's kind of what they grew up with, right?
Right. And when that first time home buyer isn't out there, then the person who bought the starter home can't really move up. So we've had kind of an odd divide, economically speaking, of you know, when people are moving. I mean, when I got to school in 89, I wanted to buy a house. I don't know about you.
It's interesting you say that.
I saved money.
I remember in the early 90s, you know, there were people buying houses for their kids because that's just
Absolutely.
What they did. And obviously, mentally, we moved away from that, and maybe we're moving a little bit. Okay, so we just have less than a minute left. But if someone's, you know, sitting on a mortgage, how do they figure out if refinancing is the right thing for them to do?
I think you got to dial 312-896-2110 or go to townstone.com. We're happy to show you no refinance loan options. That's no closing costs. There's nothing hidden. And we'll go through the different parameters of if you want to pay some closing costs or not. But you really need a professional to take a look and to say that my rate has to be down a half a point, like certain people say, you know, refinance is absolutely untrue. Don't pay your bank too much money. They don't need the money. They have plenty of money. You need the money.
Barry Sterner, the CEO of Townstone Financial. Good to see you again.
I appreciate it.
You're listening
Thank
to
you.
The Business Lunch on 720 WGN.